The Job by Sinclair Lewis. Part 1. The City. Chapter 1. Captain Lew Golden would have saved any foreign observer a great deal of trouble in studying America. He was an almost perfect type of the petty, small-town, middle-class lawyer. He lived in Panama, Pennsylvania. He had never been captain of anything except the Crescent Volunteer Fire Company, but he owned the title because he collected rents, wrote insurance, and meddled with lawsuits. He carried a quite visible mustache comb and wore a collar but no tie. On warm days he appeared on the street in his shirt sleeves and discussed the comparative temperatures of the past 30 years with Dr. Smith and the Mansion House bus driver. He never used the word beauty, except in reference to a setter dog. Beauty of words or music, of faith or rebellion, did not exist for him. He rather fancied large, ambitious, banal, red and gold sunsets, but he merely glanced at them as he straggled home and remarked that they were nice. He believed that all Parisians, artists, millionaires, and socialists were immoral. His entire system of theology was comprised in the Bible, which he never read, and the Methodist Church, which he rarely attended, and he desired no system of economics beyond the current platform of the Republican Party. He was aimlessly industrious, crotchety but kind, and almost quixotically honest. He believed that Panama, Pennsylvania was good enough for anybody. This last opinion was not shared by his wife, nor by his daughter, Una. Mrs. Golden was one of the women who aspire just enough to be vaguely discontented, not enough to make them toil at the acquisition of understanding and knowledge. She had floated into a comfortable semi-belief in a semi-Christian Science, and she read novels with a conviction that she would have been a romantic person if she hadn't married Mr. Golden. Not but what he's a fine man and very bright and all, but he hasn't got much imagination or any, well, romance. She wrote poetry about spring and neighborhood births, and Captain Golden admired it so actively that he read it aloud to callers. She attended all the meetings of the Panama Study Club and desired to learn French, though she never went beyond borrowing a French grammar from the Episcopalian rector and learning one conjugation. But in the pioneer suffrage movement she took no part. She didn't think it was quite ladylike. She was a poor cook, and her house always smelled stuffy, but she liked to have flowers about. She was pretty of face, frail of body, genuinely gracious of manner. She really did like people, liked to give cookies to the neighborhood boys, and, if you weren't impatient with her slackness, you found her a wistful and touching figure in her slight youthfulness and in the ambition to be a romantic personage, a Marie Antoinette or a Mrs. Grover Cleveland, which ambition she still retained at 55. She was, in appearance, the ideal wife and mother, sympathetic, forgiving, bright-lipped as a May morning. She never demanded, she merely suggested her desires, and, if they were refused, let her lips droop in a manner which only a brute could withstand. She plaintively admired her efficient daughter, Una. Una Golden was a good little woman, not pretty, not noisy, not particularly articulate, but instinctively on the inside of things, naturally able to size up people and affairs. She had common sense and unkindled passion. She was a matter-of-fact...